via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Shaykh Qasim Muhammadi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa bihi nasta'in. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ahli bayti at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammadin wa ajjil farajahum. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are tuned to IRIB Radio, and this is For Humanity. In this program, inshallah, we're going to try to know, or in other words, to sort of recognize the human nature, also human characteristics, talents, obstacles that may be in the way to human beings' growth, and in general, to examine the reality of human being, especially based on the Quran and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam. But the question that is very important before starting the discussion that must be answered is, why is this topic important? Why is it important for us to know the reality of human being and to broaden our understanding about man in different aspects? The answer to this question would be that by using the power of understanding and our cognitive faculty, we are able to make ourselves aware of various things. For example, knowing nature, knowing living things in nature, knowing non-living things and inanimate objects, knowing the earth, knowing the universe, and the likes. But in fact, there are sciences dealing with all the foresaid topics, and for sure all of them are important. But which of these knowledges or sciences is more important? The answer to this question, I believe, is what we have to lose by not knowing this information and the harm or loss that we sustain by not caring about such knowledge gives us the answer. So the greater the amount of loss in not knowing a subject is, the more important that knowledge would be, and the more priority it has to be known. Okay, with this introduction, I believe that it should be known that it seems that the most important, or at least one of the most important issues, that by not knowing which there is a great possibility of harm for us is the knowledge about the reality of human being. The other issue is knowledge about God, of course. And in general, such philosophical questions are at the top of the list of important things to know. Because the lack of knowledge about these matters put us in grave danger, or at least a very likely grave danger. So, for example, in theology, there is an argument for the existence of God, known in the West as Paschal Wager, which is, of course, mentioned in the words of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhimu salatu wassalam, including Imam al-Sadiq and also Imam al-Ridha, alayhimu salatu wassalam, which is an argument based on probabilities. And this explanation that we gave just now also is of this nature, is a sort of probabilistic explanation. So the issue of human knowledge is of much importance, because if a person does not achieve a correct knowledge of himself or herself, he or she will be in a very possibility of being in danger in his or her life. Okay, so let's have a short break, and inshallah we're going to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Dear brothers and sisters, we've been talking about the necessity and actually the importance of the topic of knowing oneself and knowing the nature and the reality of human being. And the last point we mentioned was that the way that we can infer that this issue is so important and is of much importance is that by losing, this knowledge, and by not having this knowledge and lacking this knowledge, there are possible dangers that we might be endangered with. And that is why that rationally we have to care about such knowledges more than other knowledges. So in one word, man's lack of proper knowledge of themselves and of their nature and reality, and also of their potentials and characteristics, and similarly, their lofty and important goals, as well as the knowledge of the obstacles and dangers that may exist for their perfection and kamal, cause them to fall and al-ayadu billah, or al-ayadu billah, destruction, and will cause them irreparable personal and social problems, both for themselves and also for others. The fundamental individual or social problems, various political and economic anomalies in countries also can be traced back to the fact that they have made a mistake in their humanology, or their knowledge about human being and the reality of human being. And this understanding about humanity that it's just a material being, and having this completely materialistic worldview about human being has been, the source and the origin of much, if not all, of those problems that we talked about, especially problems in decision-making, especially in the arena of international affairs. So, those people who make a decision to wage a war against a nation, if the worldview or the humanology that they have about human being, the understanding that they have about human being, is a wrong one, and is based on wrong worldview and the understanding is a dangerous one, it could end up, you know, waging war and killing many people, hundreds of thousands, you know, souls. So this shows that how important this issue is. And on the other hand, the monotheistic point of view with respect to the reality of humanity that we believe in, we believe that it can guarantee the growth of man and the society both in all aspects, but of course if applied and if it is realized in the practical realm. And the most important, for example, issue regarding the Quran and the Quranic view on the reality of man is the two-dimensionality of man, that man is consisted of two dimensions. It's not just a material body, and it's both spiritual and also material. And priority and superiority of the spiritual realm that the soul of man has. So, inshallah, we're going to talk about these issues, especially from the Quranic point of view, and also the view that has been elaborated in the traditions and the rewards of the Ahlul Bayt in the coming sessions. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with US and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the U.S. has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced.
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law. To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China. Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look to the US and South Korea as its allies. $120 billion. Once the budget is injected into Japan's military, it will bump up Japan's ranking among the top military spenders in the world from 8th place all the way up to 3rd place, just below the US and China, even higher than Russia during a time of war. And this amount of expenditure is going to hurt Japanese economy. Kishida's plans will double Japan's defense outlays to about 2% of the country's gross domestic product over the next 5 years. It would also mean that Japan's defense ministry will now have 10% of the country's entire annual public spending. In the document that outlines the plan for the military expenditures, what is not included is how the money will come about. It's unclear whether the government will have to raise money through tax increases or whether it will borrow the money. But if we look at the reason behind this unprecedented amount of spending on military by Japan, that is known for its pacifist constitution, we will realize that if not for the US's recent provocative actions, Japan would not deem its security threatened. North Korea's ICBM missile tests only came about as a result of US provocations, and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has mentioned this on multiple occasions. With regards to the issue of Taiwan, if not for the meddling of the US in Taiwan's affairs and the breaking of the One China policy that the US had previously agreed to, China would not have conducted the biggest military exercise in its history. If not for the constant eastward expansion of NATO, spearheaded by the US, the war in Ukraine would also not have happened, and Japan's concerns over Russia encouraging China to also attack Taiwan would never come to be. It's almost as if Japan's alliance with the US is costing them more money than it's bringing in. And that is completely disregarding the security risks that this alliance has brought upon the land of the rising sun.
Iran has wrapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights. The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on 4 more people and has many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, from the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
The United States is finalizing plans to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The plan needs the final approval of U.S. Defense Chief Lloyd Austin and the U.S. President Joe Biden. It is not known how many of the batteries will be sent to Ukraine, but reports say supplies to Ukraine will be limited. But according to available data, a typical Patriot battery includes a radar set that detects and tracks targets, computers, and a power-generating equipment. It also includes an engagement control station and up to 8 launchers, each holding 4 radio-fire missiles. The systems are likely to be sent to the U.S. Army base in Grafenwöhr, Germany, where Ukrainian soldiers are likely to be trained and use the equipment. Ukraine has long been requesting the U.S. to send advanced long-range air defense system.
The message is simple. Give Patriots as soon as you can. Because this is the system that Ukraine needs to protect its civilian population and critical infrastructure. This is not an offensive weapon.
Russia has already warned that Patriot missile systems in Ukraine, if are deployed in the conflict, will be targeted. The former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who is now Deputy Chair of the National Security Council, had earlier warned that such weapons and their crews would be legitimate targets if a NATO member were to deliver them.
Washington уже сделал себя стороной конфликта в практической плоскости. Принимая во внимание растущие объемы прямой американской военной помощи, включая присутствие военнослужащих США на земле, передача столь сложного вооружения, обращение с которым требует многомесячной подготовки, будет означать расширение вовлеченности кадровых американских военных в боевые действия со всеми вытекающими последствиями. Настоятельно советуем тем, кто в Вашингтоне принимает решение, наконец прислушаться, возможно, не к нам, но к самим себе, сделать правильные выводы из наших неоднократных предупреждений о том, что любые поставляемые на Украину оружейные системы, в том числе Patriot, соответственно, обслуживающим персоналом, были и остаются законными приоритетными целями для вооруженных сил России.
The U.S. and its Western partners have already resupplied Ukraine's air defense missiles and shoulder-fired Stinger missiles and other larger air defense systems. Patriot missile system is one of the most advanced U.S. systems against aircraft and missiles. Ukrainian officials say the delivery of Patriot missiles would be a game changer, but the efficiency of those weapons for Ukraine in the war against Russia is not clear. Each missile battery would require dozens of well-trained air defenders to operate. Even with an accelerated training program, could be sometime in early 2023 before a system is operational in Ukraine. Experts believe the Patriot has a more powerful radar that is better at discriminating targets, but it has its own limitations. Its efficiency would depend on how the weapon was delivered. The success rate of the Patriot has been repeatedly questioned. In 2018, Saudi Arabia's success in using Patriots against missiles fired in the Yemen war were questioned when evidence of systems failing emerged. The Patriot does not reportedly perform so well against small drones. It is not known whether the system's radar could pick up the small, low-flying drones or whether there were other issues. The U.S. has now committed more than $19.3 billion in weapons and other equipment to Ukraine since the war began in February of this year.
As we work with industry to accelerate production on both replenishment systems and direct procurements under the United Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, or USAI, we're using a number of tools to get the funding moving and the contracting happen quickly. These include using contracting mechanisms called things like undefinitized contracting actions, sometimes called UCAs. What that allows you to do deliberately is to get industry working on an initial contract before we definitize it. And you can put a UCA together within a week, and we're doing that. We also are making use of indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, or IDIQ. If you have IDIQs, and we have many of them, what you can do is just add task orders to them very quickly to get equipment on contract.
It is widely believed that those U.S.-made weapons are fanning the flames of war in Europe. But there are concerns that those weapons are falling into the wrong hands.
We're seeing this incredible, historic flow of weapons coming into Ukraine. Do we have any sense as to where they're going?
We don't know. There is really no information as to where they're going at all.
You know, all this stuff goes to the border, and then kind of like something happens, it kind of like 30% maybe reaches its final destination.
Washington is reportedly looking into technological solutions to the problem of weapons diversion. Western weapons earmarked for Ukraine had reportedly surfaced in the hands of militant groups in the African Sahel.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says more than 11,000 Yemeni children have been killed or maimed since the Saudi-led aggression against the impoverished country began in 2015. The agency says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk of death from starvation or preventable diseases. That's why the true toll of the conflict is likely to be far higher. According to the agency, about 2.2 million Yemeni children are acutely malnourished. One quarter of them aged under five. Most of them are at extreme risk from cholera and other vaccine-preventable diseases. Described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis by the UN, nearly three-quarters of Yemen's population is said to be in need of humanitarian aid and protection. UNICEF is seeking over $480 million to respond to the crisis in Yemen over the next year, and has warned that lack of predictable funding puts children's lives and well-being further at risk. The agency has also called on the warring sides to renew a UN-brokered truce, which was announced in April and expired in October without an agreement to extend it. At least 62 children have been killed or wounded since then. The collapse of Yemen's ceasefire risks rolling back some of the progress that has been made after the lifting of a Saudi blockade on Yemen that has prevented airplanes and ships from entering and leaving the country. While both sides have blamed the other for failure of a lasting ceasefire, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has stated that restoring peace in Yemen is not possible unless the invading countries abandon their arrogant mentality. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 with arms and logistics support from the U.S. and other Western states. The objective was to reinstall the Riyadh-friendly regime of Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi and crush the popular Ansarullah movement, which has been running state affairs in the absence. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died ever since, either as a result of war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, disease outbreaks, hunger, and other impacts. In Yemen, thousands of civilian and child deaths have been blamed on Saudi-led airstrikes, which have hit markets, weddings, funerals, residential homes, and hospitals. In addition, Yemen's health ministry said last month that 80 newborn babies lose their lives on a daily basis because the war-torn country does not have the required medical equipment due to the Saudi-led war and blockade. Yemeni officials say the use of prohibited weapons is one of the reasons behind a growing trend of children's death. Several human rights organizations have already acknowledged and condemned Saudis for using such arms. Since launching the war, with the support of Washington, the Saudi-led coalition has used internationally banned weapons, including U.S.-made cluster bombs to target residential areas. Apart from the war, Riyadh has imposed a blockade on Yemen, which combined have claimed lives of hundreds of thousands of people. The military aggression has destroyed much of the country's infrastructure, including health sector. Meanwhile, Sana'a has warned foreign companies against plundering energy resources of the country, stressing that it will spare no effort to defend national sovereignty and safeguard public interests and health. The Saudi-led coalition and their proxies have looted more than $13 billion in Yemeni oil revenues between 2016 and 2021. The large amount could have been used to pay the salaries of employees in the National Salvation Government, reduce the exchange rate, and help improve the living standards for Yemenis and alleviate their suffering.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of iRab English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned. In the Holy Quran, Surah An-Nisa, Ayah 32, we read, "Do not covet the advantage which Allah has given some of you over others. To men belongs a share of what they have earned, and to women a share of what they have earned. And ask Allah for His bounty. Indeed, Allah has knowledge of all things."
لذا اینقدر آیات قرآن داریم زنها رو تو مسیر خدای نکرده عدم نجابت نندازید.
In the Holy Quran, we have many ayahs that invite the women to chastity and modesty. Unfortunately, there are some men who act against the text of the Quran
and ask their wives to be present in the society without proper hijab or chaste clothing. Once, a man saw a couple who were passing in the street. The wife was without hijab and put on many cosmetics. The man went to the husband and asked him for permission to look at his beautiful wife. The husband got angry and called him crazy. The man said, "Why do you call me crazy? All the other stranger men are looking at your wife without taking permission. However, I asked for your permission. So what is wrong with that?" The husband became quiet and left the area with his wife. This shows that many men and women are pure in their nature, but they are trapped in satanic temptations. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about our program on Call of Islam page, IRIB English Radio, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
IRIB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers of your questions are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and researcher in the Hausa Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Nakavi, what are the changes that take place in adolescence that parents or guiders or the trainers should be taking care of?
First and foremost, things which are quite apparent are the changes in the physical nature of the human being. The body form is changing. Things which were not there before in the form of those things which make a woman and a man, and they can carry out a physical union in the form of marriage. Those things were not there before. Even if they were, a child would not know that these are for what. Those physical changes try to make a person realize that he's changing, and he looks at himself or herself and finds herself in a new position. And this surprises a person, makes a person feel happy about it, or confused about it.
Even feel embarrassed.
Embarrassed or adore, start to adore oneself. Look what I'm changing. I'm becoming an adult. I'm becoming of age. So these things lead to a change in the mind also. There are physical hormonal changes which are taking place along with that. So as the apparent changes are coming in, there are changes coming within which are being caused by those physical changes or are in harmony with those changes. So thoughts and feelings are also being aroused, which are different from the thoughts and feelings which were there before.
Yeah.
So now the person has to be able to be taught in such a way that this is something natural. I mean, before...
It's okay.
It's okay. It's something natural. You have to face it. It's not something which you should get confused
or excited about.
Or embarrassed or whatever. It is something natural, and you have to manage those feelings.
Yeah.
And, of course, unfortunately, in our society, especially in the traditional conservative societies, parents feel embarrassed about talking
to their teens.
That's a difficult situation. So yes, if a parent cannot do it on himself or by himself or herself, then she or he should take the help of a person who can relate to their children, explain to them. Yes, unfortunately, again, in the West, sex education is becoming important. It is becoming that the children should be taught everything. No, not at all.
All right. So you disagree?
I mean, you talk about what the changes are. What do they imply? How do they have to be managed? But you start talking about them, how to have safe sex. Now, that is something very difficult. I mean, you're telling your children, okay, it's no problem. The changes are
there. So if there are some arousings, you're actually putting catalyst into it.
Exactly. You are providing them opportunities. You are providing them, showing them the path to carry out those things which are not allowed. So basically, children, adolescents have to be educated in such a way. They have to be made. Have to realize what the changes are. They have to understand what the changes are, but they also have to be taught how to manage them. And therefore, it is the duty of the parents. It is the duty of, especially, their school-going children. The schools have to also take care of these things. And it's, of course, according to our understanding, the segregation should take place in the schools.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult to say that you go towards the fire, sit by the fire and you don't get burnt. It's not possible.
All right. So, well, we'll discuss more on that important issue after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi, and we're discussing about the changes that take place in adolescence. Professor Naqavi, before going to the break, you said that in adolescence, there are not just physical changes, there are not just hormonal changes, there are not just biological changes, there are also cognitive changes, there are mental changes, there are different kind of changes, and your adolescent needs not only to be educated about that, but also he should be educated how to manage those changes.
Yes. I mean, the important thing is understanding what those changes are and how to manage them, the feelings, especially the feelings and the thoughts. Because basically, if we have taken care of the intellectual development of the child in the domain of intellectual development, cognitive development, we have to make him understand the difference between pure thoughts, truth, and things which are illusionary, imaginary. I mean, the imagination in an adult becomes very strong. Though it in a child, every child has that imaginative skill in his mind, and it is very important when it comes to constructing ideas, developing new things. Imagination is very plays a very essential role in technology, in many things, in fine arts. But that it has a downside. Imagination, if you allow it to run wild, it will cause you to think of things which will cause those feelings to arise. You will create things in your mind which will seduce you, unfortunately, will cause you to think of things which cannot take place.
Which, and it would be difficult to manage.
And it's difficult to, yes. Therefore, one has to be able to learn how to control thoughts and then feelings. Thoughts, and the best way to do is to keep ourselves busy in pursuits which are positive, learning things about things which are beneficial for us. The more we are engaged with things which are important in life, the more we can cut off those things which are not beneficial and they are harmful. So we have to, in the intellectual development and the emotional development of a child, and even as adults, we have to be able to manage our thoughts and our feelings. And that is the most important thing. Practices, actions can be managed as a result of the thoughts and feelings that we are managing. Therefore, a child is engaged in activities which keeps him or her involved in positive things, in physical development, mind exercises, management of the, playing games which create a positive atmosphere, create an atmosphere where his thought process or her thought process becomes advanced, progresses. He is able to think in a pure way, pure thoughts, pure reasoning, mathematics, philosophy, culture.
And much more.
And much more.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned for us.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I am with Professor Naqavi, and we are discussing about the changes in adolescence. Well, Professor Naqavi, before we discuss more, we have an audience question. This is a lady, Ferdil, from Holland. She says, "I have a 17-year-old girl. Her name is Gadir. And I have a 16-year-old girl. Her name is Maryam. The 16-year-old is very, very humble, but the 17-year-old Gadir is so, so rebellious. I don't know how to deal with them. Can you help me?"
We have a situation where one of the girls has become rebellious because it means that she, at the age where those feelings had to be managed, because as we mentioned, the changes which are taking place in the feelings, in the emotions of an adolescent, is one of them is that a person becomes aggressive, questions everything, becomes curious, wants answers, wants things to be done the way she or he wants them.
Yeah.
So at that age, if a parent becomes aggressive, he or she becomes aggressive in response to the aggression of the child,
things become worse.
Whereas if he or she, the parents, one of the parents or both of the parents, and it's important that they work together in unison, they work in harmony to control those these problems and issues that are being faced. Generally, the problem is mothers are left on their own to deal with their children, especially the girls, because fathers wouldn't like to get themselves involved with girls, in especially in those very sensitive issues. But yes, now that the stage of that the teenage has progressed up to 17, she has obviously passed those early years of puberty and adolescence. Now she's advanced and progressed into those later years, and she has made an opinion. She's started to develop her own thoughts. She's not just copying them. She's not ready to imitate. She's not ready to accept what the elders are saying. Now you have to become a little bit, you have to engage in an intellectual way. Reasoning should take over emotional, the emotional way of trying to control and reacting to the feelings. One has to keep his or her mind very cool-headed approach, being able to understand, trying to become friendly with the child, trying to understand the reason for being aggressive. What is she looking for? There must be something she is feeling that is required. She may be feeling some deficiency. She may even be looking for a husband. I mean, she may be of the age that she requires, she must be married off.
All right.
So the child, the parent has to understand what is she looking for. And that can only be carried out in a very subtle way, in a very tender way,
through engaging in discussion,
in becoming friendly with her, talking to her in such a way that we are friends. Don't think upon me as your mother. We're friends. We're girls. Let's be happy.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, the way how she could be able to manage that situation.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Nakavi, for helping us with that important stuff. Dear Sister Ferdiel, aggression should not be answered with aggression. As per expert, aggression should be answered with cool-mindedness. And you should help your daughter that her reasoning part dominates her emotional part and engage her in discussions. That's how you could help your daughter. And we will also pray for you. Thank you so much for questioning. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
In the limelight.
To Palestinians and their allies, U.S. hypocrisy is palpable. The United States selectively criticizes some countries for their human rights violations, but pointedly ignores the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and its commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity against the Palestinian people. 2 years after launching an investigation of war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Palestine, the ICC is still dragging its feet because of U.S. pressures. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Truth Out wrote in this regard, on November 21st, Bezalel Smotrich, head of the Zionist regime's far-right religious Zionism party, called Palestinian human rights organizations an existential threat to Israel. He said that the incoming Israeli regime government must take legal and security measures against them, including seizing their funds. 2 days later, 198 Palestinian, regional and international civil society organizations, including the National Lawyers Guild, Center for Constitutional Rights, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and International Association of Democratic Lawyers, wrote an open letter to Chief ICC Prosecutor Karim Khan, decrying missed opportunities for preventive statements in the past year. The CSO cited the Zionist regime's killing of Palestinians without clear provocation, as well as raids and assaults against worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque and at Haram al-Sharif in occupied East Al-Quds. Three of the six designated terrorist organizations, the CSOs noted, have been providing the ICC Prosecutor's Office with information about serious crimes committed by Israeli nationals within the jurisdiction of the court. The CSOs cited the Apartheid Convention, which lists as an inhuman act of apartheid the persecution of organizations and persons by depriving them of fundamental rights and freedoms because they oppose apartheid. The CSOs wrote that, although Israel's targeting of these organizations could hinder the work of the ICC, there has been no public reaction by your office. The CSO urged the Office of the Prosecutor to publicly condemn and call on Israel to rescind the terrorist designations, publicly affirm that the Office of the Prosecutor will scrutinize Israel's crimes during its unprovoked military offensive in August 2022, urgently expedite the ICC investigation into the situation of Palestine, including the crimes committed against humanity of apartheid and persecution, and finally, issue preventive statements to deter the Zionist regime's crimes against humanity and war crimes. The Zionist regime's Prime Minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu is assembling Israel's most extreme right-wing government to date. Attorney Diana Bhutto, former advisor to the negotiating team of Palestine Liberation Organization, wrote in an op-ed in New York Times, Netanyahu's government will likely be receptive to Smotrich's suggestion to persecute Palestinian human rights organizations even more severely than the prior government that designated them terrorists and shut down their offices. Moreover, the chief enabler of the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory, the U.S. government, which annually provides the Zionist regime with $3.8 billion in military aid, is implicitly exerting pressure on Khan to drag his feet on the ICC investigation of the Zionist regime crimes. When U.S. President Joe Biden visited Al-Quds in July, he and the Zionist regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid concluded an agreement affirming they would continue to work together to combat all efforts to unfairly single Israel out in any forum, including at the UN or International Criminal Court. Although the United States refuses to join the ICC, it has consistently tried to undermine it, expressing serious concerns about the ICC's attempts to exercise its jurisdiction over Israeli regime personnel. But on March 15th, 100 U.S. senators, who find it difficult to agree on anything, unanimously passed SR 546, which encourages member states to petition the ICC or other appropriate international tribunal to take any appropriate steps to investigate war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by other countries. To Palestinians and their allies, U.S. hypocrisy is palpable. The United States selectively criticizes some countries for their human rights violations, but pointedly ignores the Zionist regime's illegal